puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
We are going to go exploring back in time and across the Arctic with Gordon Goldsborough, who joins me now from the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
Now, remind me of the clue that you said last time.
Mm-hmm. I said today we would be visiting the home, the abandoned home, of a noted Arctic explorer.
So whose home are we visiting?
A fellow named Captain William Kennedy.
Okay.
And the captain part of his name comes from the explorations that he undertook. He actually was one of the many people who went out in search of Sir John Franklin. Of course, Franklin was a British explorer who had been trying to look for a sort of a Northwest Passage through the Arctic and, of course, disappeared, never to be seen again. And of course, just recently we have discovered the remains of his two ships. Well, back in 1850, William Kennedy was one of many people sent out in hopes of finding him. And, of course, like many others, he did not succeed. He did, however, find areas of the Arctic that had not previously been explored, so he gained quite a bit of a reputation as a noted Arctic explorer. But he has origins here in Western Canada. He was born in northern Saskatchewan at a fur trade post, Cumberland House. He was sent as a young boy to Scotland to get his education. And then he came back to Canada. He worked for a while in the fur trade. He was a missionary for a while. He eventually had a rather poor health, and so later in his life, he came back here to the area of the Red River Settlement and had a very substantial home built right overlooking the Red River.
And he was of Métis heritage.
He was indeed. Right. That's right. His father was a fur trader, and his mother was an Indigenous woman from Cumberland House. So he had this stone house. Now, listeners may recall that about 4 weeks ago, we talked about another stone house on the Red River. That was the former rectory at St. Peter Dynevor, the church. And there's actually a few of these stone houses. Well, at one time, there were actually quite a few of these stone houses along the river. But of course, through the years, many of them have been torn down. So this is one of the remaining ones. And in fact, I've been told that it's perhaps one of the sixth most historically significant homes we have left here in Manitoba.
Really?
Yeah, it was. Well, a number of things that were significant about it. One is that it was built by quite a noted stonemason, a fellow named Duncan McRae, and he's known for having built quite a number of the most impressive stone structures here in the former Red River Settlement. Of course, the other noteworthy thing about it is that it was the home for Captain William Kennedy. From the time that it was built in between 1866 and 1870. From then until 1890, when Captain Kennedy passed away, it was, the Kennedy residence. Well, after Mr. Kennedy passed away, it was changed hands once. His widow, unfortunately, was in rather reduced circumstances, and so she was forced to sell the house. It was in another person's hands for a while, and then in 1908, it was bought by a couple from Winnipeg, a fellow named John McAllister and his wife Carolyn. Now, Carolyn is the interesting connection. She was a daughter of a fellow named John Norquay. Now, people might recognize the name Norquay because, of course, we have a building in downtown Winnipeg, the Norquay Building, and it's named for John Norquay.
Okay.
He was one of Manitoba's first premiers. In fact, he has the distinction of having been the very first premier of Manitoba who was actually born here. And in fact, quite a years after his death, he continued to be the only native Manitoban premier. And so his daughter and her husband bought the house. Now, it turns out she was a niece of William Kennedy. So there was a sort of a family connection there that was maintained. And they lived in that house from 1908 to 1946. And in fact, they made one of the biggest expansions to the house. The original house was fairly modest. It was it was an attractive house. And by the standards of the Red River Settlement, it was considered quite an attractive home. It was fairly basic, though. It was a two-story house. It had four rooms on the main floor. It had a parlor, a kitchen, a dining area. Upstairs were bedrooms. But in, I guess because the McAllisters felt that it really wasn't large enough for their needs, it wasn't modern enough. In 1922, they added a fairly substantial two-story sort of what they called the servants' wing. And it had a modern kitchen. It had more space. It also added modern plumbing and heating. So that house then became quite a grand house, and the McAllisters lived there until 1946 when they eventually moved back to Winnipeg. It changed hands again, and then in the late 1960s, it came into the ownership of a fellow who I think really took it to the next level. The fellow who owned it next was a fellow named Dr. Edward Shaw. Now he was a family practitioner. He was a physician, and he was passionate about Manitoba's history. In fact, just before he came to own the house, he had been reading a book from the 1920s, a really remarkable book. It's called The Women of Red River. And what it was the reminiscences of women who had gone, whose own personal history went back to the Red River period. You know, a lot of times the history is written in terms of the powerful, the affluent, yeah. The male. Mm-hmm. And so you hear about the businessmen, you hear about the politicians. You don't always hear about the women in the background. And this book was remarkable in the sense that it told the stories of these women. One of the women who was profiled in that book, the Women of Red River, was Mrs. Norquay, John Norquay's mm-hmm. widow. And it turns out in her later years, she had gone to live with her daughter, Carolyn, who, of course, lived in the old Kennedy house. So they talked in this book about the Norquay, you know, family. They talked about this home, this beautiful home. And, of course, they mentioned William Kennedy and how he had been this Arctic explorer. Well, Dr. Shaw read this book. It was quite a long time after it had been published. It was published back in the 1920s. He read it and thought, this is remarkable. Here's a guy who we know almost nothing about, yeah. this William Kennedy. So if it weren't for Dr. Shaw, I think William Kennedy would have just passed into obscurity. But it was really Dr. Shaw who brought that figure back to public attention. He bought the house. It was for sale. He bought it. And he intended to turn it into the first private museum. To commemorate this mm-hmm. This noted Arctic explorer. Unfortunately, he apparently suffered a little bit of problems trying to get it turned into a museum. He tried to have it rezoned and the neighbors objected, mm-hmm. so he couldn't. Apparently, what he did to circumvent them was that he advertised it as a suburban medical office.
So creative.
So for a number of years then, he operated as a museum. Unfortunately, Dr. Shaw passed away at a fairly young age in his late 50s. To our benefit, it was then purchased by the provincial government. There was actually a program then. It was started in the late 1970s, went into the 1980s. It was a joint program of the Canadian government with the provincial government, and the idea was to draw people's attention to the historical and the scenic and the environmental interests of the Red River. And so they thought, well, here, this building, this magnificent stone building overlooking the Red River would be a suitable place to have for public ownership. So they purchased it. They added an enclosed porch. They expanded the already impressive gardens that were around the house. And then they turned it over. The provincial government turned it over to a group of women from the St. Andrews-on-the-Red Anglican Church that was just nearby. And they basically then operated it as a small gift shop, a tea room, and a little museum to Captain Kennedy for almost 20 years, the proceeds of which went to benefit the church. So it seemed like a kind of a win-win situation, right. Because the province owned it and therefore it was protected. In fact, in 1985, it became a provincially designated historic site. It was deemed as such a significant building. As I said, one of the six most significant historical homes here in Manitoba. Well, then in about 2003, the Anglican Women's Group, I guess, passed it over to a private entrepreneur, and it reopened as what was called the Maple Grove Tea Room. And then for the next dozen years, it continued to be operated. In fact, it was widely known across Canada. One of the major magazines described it as one of the best places for afternoon tea in Canada. People would go there, you know, for high tea. They would go for banquets and meals. And people would get their wedding photos taken in the garden. It was really a beautiful spot. You apparently needed to have a 1 or 2 week notice to get a reservation wow. to go there.
Yeah,
it was that popular.
Exclusive.
Well, everything came crashing to a halt in 2015. The tea room operator was abruptly evicted, and we don't know quite the circumstances. We know that there was a visit from the fire commissioner, and apparently there were some sort of safety code violations that had occurred. An engineer was brought in, and apparently that report was issued, and it said that the building, although it was in fair to good structural condition, there were some foundation repairs that were needed in sort of the intermediate term. but nothing of any urgency, it didn't sound like.
Okay.
So what I've always found odd is that the condition of the building did not seem to warrant the immediacy with which it was evacuated.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, nevertheless, you know, in 2005, it was emptied out. A big sign was erected outside that says, Captain Kennedy House is closed until further notice to address structural issues and the long-term preservation of this important historical building. We will reopen once repairs have been complete. Well, to my knowledge, not much has happened. I reached out to the provincial government trying to find out what the current status of it was. Mm-hmm. You know, how far along were those repairs that had been promised? And it sounds like really not much has happened. What I heard back was relatively little. And what it says is basically that they had done some work. They were going to be continuing to look at it. They were hoping that maybe in the future it could be opened as a gift shop or an art gallery. There were still decisions to be made, but really non-committal. There was nothing really definite about when it would be, other than that it would probably not be this year.
Big change from 2 years ago when it was, you know, you couldn't book a reservation in
that
place.
The place, absolutely. So for at least the last 2 years now, this wonderful home that has connections both to a noted Arctic explorer, but also Manitoba's first native-born premier, both of them having connections to this home. Unfortunately, it's now sitting abandoned.
Well, thank you so much for exploring on our behalf. Really appreciate it. Give us a clue for next time.
Well, next week we're going to consider an abandoned medical facility that was associated with men in funny-looking hats.
Perfect. Gordon, thanks so much for joining me this morning.
You're welcome, Nadja.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.